Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Used to Go to Church, Rethinking God on the Front Line of Life's Tragedies, by Nick Velicides. Foreword by Jim Palmer. Narrated by George W. Saris. Foreword. Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote, "Suffering is a chance you take by the fact of being alive." People sometimes question the existence or character of God because of suffering in the world and the tragedies that inevitably befall our lives. However, we should at least acknowledge that God informed us that the human journey would be volatile, including such trials and tribulations as loss, disease, death, and heartbreaking experiences that make us weep. Lest we think that God has unfairly singled us out with hardship, few human beings will ever experience the psychological and physical suffering Jesus endured. If there is anyone with reason to walk away from God on account of suffering, it would be Nick Velicides. Frequently, Nick is thrust into a world of heartbreak, tragedy, and some of the most gruesome scenes of death. For nearly 25 years, Nick has been called to grim scenes, including a 13-year-old suicide, pool drowning of a toddler, domestic violence, homicide, gruesome vehicle accidents, deadly plane crash, suicides too many to count, and numerous teenage overdoses. Nick is a first responder chaplain, which means he is called into horrific scenarios of death and loss for the purpose of providing psychological, emotional, and spiritual support to those affected by these tragedies. It was the 15-year-old boy's dad who found him hanging from a rope in his room. The toddler's mother pulled her little girl out of the backyard pool, but it was too late. Those who fled for their lives from the Paradise Fire in Northern California. There were people to notify that their loved ones had perished in a fire, and parents whose children would not be returning home from school. It was Nick's job to tell them, comfort them, be a human being of compassion and empathy, and guide them through the initial steps of trauma recovery and processing their grief. On a regular basis, he sees the unbearable grief of others in those first few minutes of reckoning. The work of a first responder chaplain also involves supporting other first responders, such as paramedics, EMTs, police officers, firefighters, and rescuers, who are often traumatized by their direct involvement in gruesome scenes of death and loss of life. Nick was instrumental in starting the peer support teams for his fire and police departments. For every death on the scene of a fire, there is a firefighter who feels some responsibility. For every unsuccessful attempt to revive a victim, there is a paramedic who feels a sense of failure. Police officers can never unsee the grim scene of a child run over by a car. Nick's role as a first responder chaplain is to be a source of understanding and support for these brave men and women. The word chaplain in Nick's job title evokes the subject of God and immerses him in the hurt, anger, betrayal, and disillusionment people often feel toward God in the face of catastrophic loss. How could God take my little girl? Why would God let my son die like this? Where is God? These are a few of the desperate questions often asked of Nick in the moments of a person's greatest heartache and sorrow. Despite Nick's theological background and years as a pastor before his career as a first responder chaplain, he discovered that questions about the meaning of tragedy and suffering and where to find God in it are not worked out with seminary answers or well-intended statements from church people like, "Your son is in a better place now," "God wanted her home," or "God will never give you more than you can handle." Outside of Christian subculture in his work as a first responder chaplain, Nick found a discomforting disconnect between the church world of pop worship songs like "God is Good All the Time" and the realities of tragedy and suffering like school shootings and teen suicide. A recurrent response he received from those left behind at these scenes of overwhelming loss, when he introduced himself as a chaplain, was, "I used to go to church." Nick wondered if the pat answers and bumper sticker theology of churchianity contributed to this, as well as the failure of the church to be real about the struggles and hardships of the human journey, and wrestling with God's place in them. If you are looking for easy and feel-good answers or bulletproof theological explanations to resolve the question of God and suffering on paper, this is not the book for you. And if you are expecting to be comforted by hearing what you have always been told in church about such things, you may be displeased and perhaps even offended. But if you are interested in reading a story about one human being's journey to make sense of life and God on the front lines of life's greatest tragedies, you will not be disappointed. Nick's honesty and humanity in telling his story is moving. The world of first responders he shows is striking. The experiences he recounts are gripping. The life and spiritual insights he shares are profound. Throughout the book, you will be given perspectives that you have likely never contemplated, and will be invited to consider God in ways that perhaps you never have. Whether you are religious or non-religious, Christian or agnostic, churchgoer or church leaver, the person who is starting with page one of "Used to Go to Church" will not be the same person who finishes the last sentence. Jim Palmer, author of Notes from Over the Edge and Inner Anarchy. Introduction. After graduating from college, two of my best hometown buddies had joined the volunteer fire department in the town where we all grew up. Boys of my generation had fantasies of becoming professional athletes, movie stars, police officers, soldiers, or firefighters. We dreamed of becoming famous or heroic. G.I. Joe boys we were. I could not resist the temptation to live out a childhood desire to be a firefighter. At the time, I was student teaching and trained to become a reserve firefighter for the city of San Clemente in Southern California. Technically, it was a volunteer role, but we were paid a small stipend each time we responded to a fire alarm. It was a rewarding experience, and I considered it a possible career track if I did not stick with teaching. Meanwhile, I was volunteering as a youth worker at my church, and the youth pastor, Ken, was a major influence in my life. After a year and a half of being a reserve firefighter and a semester into paramedic training, Ken asked me to join him in a move up to Oregon to start a teen wilderness adventure camp. For several summers before, we had organized camping and water skiing trips for our own youth group, but Ken now wanted to take it a step further and start his own camping ministry. I agonized over the decision, but felt like it was an opportunity and a calling I could not pass up. Being a firefighter had left a deep mark upon me, but I felt a calling from God to outdoor ministry. I packed my bags and left San Clemente and moved to Portland with Ken and his family. The next 3 years were vigorous and electrifying. We established creative camping ministries and organized dozens of summer outdoor wilderness camps for youth groups throughout the region. During the school year, I taught junior high school at a public school, while we would lead several weekend retreats during the year for various church groups. I will always look back on this experience with fond memories. Our camps coaxed teenagers out of their everyday routine and preoccupations, unplugged them from all their devices, and created an atmosphere where we formed meaningful relationships and had conversations about life that truly mattered. Setting up camp, cooking on an open fire, water skiing, competitions, skits, impactful speakers, and sharing forged bonds and changed lives. But after 3 years, it became increasingly difficult to raise the financial resources to keep the operation viable. we had little choice. It was not possible to continue. We celebrated our victories, lamented our stalemate, and began considering what was next in our lives. The gratification of being a spiritual influence in the lives of these teenagers compelled me to seriously consider going into full-time ministry. I decided to pursue a Master of Divinity degree at Fuller Seminary back in Southern California. Upon graduating, I was offered the youth pastor position at Peninsula Bible Church in Palo Alto, where I cut my teeth in ministry. The church was known for teaching New Covenant theology, which emphasizes the love, grace, and empowerment of God as the framework for living the Christian life, as opposed to Old Covenant mindset that stipulates that obedience to religious rules, rites, and regulations are necessary to remain in good standing with God. I have seen too many Christians, including myself, living according to the Old Covenant mentality, a performance-based relationship with God, constantly striving to earn and maintain God's approval and blessing. Jesus invited people weary of religion to come to Him for rest, replenishment, and renewal. And yet our churches are filled with people who feel exhausted, self-contempt, and emptiness inside. Though Jesus said that following Him would show one how to live freely and lightly, people in the pew often feel weighed down and shackled by their churchianity. Many of them eventually leave church and their faith altogether. My years as youth pastor at Peninsula Bible Church laid the spiritual foundation for my grace-based relationship with God and my approach to ministry as a pastor. I learned to walk in that freedom, security, and lightness of spirit Jesus spoke of, and saw my ministry as inviting others into that same life. It was at Peninsula that I met Heidi, married, and started a family. In a few short years, we became a family of four. To this day, I am partial toward the gratification and gravity of ministry to adolescents and teens. I also realized it was not realistic to provide for my growing family on a youth pastor's salary. After nearly a decade in Palo Alto, I accepted a call to serve a church in Austin, Texas, as associate pastor. Over the years, I held a special place in my heart for first responders. I would remember my dream to become a firefighter, and felt regret on occasion that I had not persisted on that path. But lo and behold, at my church in Austin, I discovered that several men were volunteer firefighters. After a number of months of recruiting me, I was convinced to join them at the C.E. Barr Volunteer Fire Department, Travis County Fire District No. 12. Soon after joining, I proposed to the fire chief, Buddy, that we needed a chaplain. It is no secret that firefighters have a dangerous job. They often help people on the worst day of their life. The scenarios can sometimes be gruesome and involve loss of life. During my service as a volunteer firefighter in Austin, there was a fire where two children died. The emotional toll it takes is intense. As you can imagine with any fire department, over time, there are seriously injured or line-of-duty deaths which impact firefighter families. I discussed with Buddy that I would be willing to be a pastor to our fire department, offering support, grief counseling, and to be someone that our firefighters could talk to when they were struggling. I became the department's first chaplain. Completing my emergency medical technician training, I spent nearly 8 years in Austin responding to fires and emergency medical calls as a firefighter, EMT, and chaplain. I quickly learned that the need for a fire and first responder chaplain was not only to offer support, comfort, and counseling to personnel and their families, but to civilians on the scene where there is tragedy and death. Church pastor by day, firefighter and first responder by night. Whether it was teaching behind a pulpit in church or hanging off the back of a fire engine speeding to a fire. It was all God's work to me. Over the years, I responded to countless emergencies involving tragedy and suffering as a chaplain, as well as a few close calls myself, escaping death in the line of duty, fighting fires. My years in Austin were some of the best of my life, and our family continued to grow, Heidi giving birth to our third child. I knew the next step in my ministerial career was to be a senior pastor, and that opportunity came back in California. I was contacted about the senior pastor position of a church community in the East Bay of San Francisco. After a couple of visits, they made an offer. I accepted. It did not take long for me to jump into the world of chaplaincy once again. I joined the ranks as a volunteer chaplain in our local East Bay Fire District and County Sheriff's Office. This immersed me in the world of law enforcement chaplaincy work. I was trained in Critical Incident Stress Debriefing, CISD, designed to minimize the impact of a traumatic event and to aid in psychological and emotional recovery for law enforcement professionals. The spectrum of duties for a law enforcement chaplain include law enforcement family support, death notifications, community care, and various responsibilities including possible hostage negotiation situations. It was not lost on me that I was straddling two vocational tracks, a ministerial career and chaplaincy work, which progressively became more difficult to juggle. The church board noticed this as well, and occasionally we discussed it and a few of them expressed concern. After 6 years of serving the church, I was asked to choose. Though I loved the people and had given the best of me in being their pastor, my heart was in the chaplaincy work. Many years prior, I had walked away from my dream to be a full-time firefighter to become a minister. But the work of a first responder chaplain would allow me to do both. The church board and I agreed that it was the best choice for me and the church. Resigning as a church pastor, even in the best of situations, is painful and difficult. I felt tremendous stress. Yes, I wanted to pursue chaplaincy work, but it was not like I had a job waiting for me. Most chaplain positions are volunteer roles and seldom paid. Meanwhile, I still had a mortgage and a family of five to provide for. There were some bleak and disheartening days as we struggled to determine what was next. I experienced a deep depression and saw no path forward. There is not an abundance of jobs for a guy with a seminary degree who needs to generate enough income for a family of five, not to mention the matter of health insurance. What I most wanted to do was continue pursuing my chaplaincy work, but it would not provide an income or benefits. I felt hopelessly stuck. You might say this was my dark night of the soul, in which I wrestled with God about what seemed to be an impossible predicament and the uncertainty of our future. When trials and hardships come into our lives, we often feel desperation and wish for divine or miraculous intervention to rescue us out of it. But I have often found that God's grace includes finding our way forward through more common means. For me, it began with the unwavering support and confidence of my wife. We also had some close and devoted friends who walked with us through this season of turbulent transition. I cleared my head and began wondering about the possibility of starting a nonprofit agency through which I could receive financial support for my role as a chaplain in the community. Turns out, a friend of mine knew someone in Southern California who several years earlier had done exactly that. He had started a nonprofit organization to serve a police and fire department as a chaplain. My friend put me in touch with him, and we immediately hit it off. He offered to allow me to use his nonprofit to initially raise supporters. That was my path forward, Over 100 people I contacted throughout the U.S., including Portland, San Francisco Bay Area, Austin, and Southern California, were eager to support my work as a chaplain, and they recruited others to do the same. All this came together just 3 months after resigning as pastor of the church. If that does not qualify as divine intervention, I am not sure what does. That network of supporters has grown and continued to this day. We often hear how God works in mysterious ways, but it also comes in very ordinary ways. An unwavering spouse, caring friends, an unexpected development, and the willingness to break out of your comfort zone to actualize a new possibility. Sometimes we are on the receiving end of these small graces and godsends. Sometimes we are these to others. Working alongside police officers, firefighters, and paramedics as a first responder chaplain, now for over 20 years, I have often found myself thrust into people's worst possible nightmares and tragedies. My hope is always in some way to be a grace or godsend in moments of catastrophic despair and suffering. However, like all first responders, this work takes a heavy toll. I was not prepared to witness such anguish and heartache when I first began my work as a chaplain back in 1998. I had no idea what I was getting into. Like most cops and firefighters who enter their careers with a noble aspiration to serve the community, but along the way encounter evil, murder, suicide, tragedy, carnage, and lives destroyed by drugs, alcohol, and crime. During this journey, something greater than the mark of sorrow, grief, and dismay this work leaves upon you has happened inside me. My faith has been challenged, confronted, tested, defied, gutted, ransacked, pushed to the brink, and turned upside down, only to become more real, more human, more durable, more whole, more courageous, more hopeful, more loving, and more liberating. I want to show you how all that happened. Let us take a ride. I want you to come with me on the actual scenes of my work as a first responder chaplain. You need to see what I saw, hear what I heard, feel what I felt, cry like I cried, doubt where I doubted, believe where I believed, and hope where I found hope. You cannot exactly experience what I did, I know, but I can bring you into my experiences as a chaplain where we share similar struggles of doubt, heartache, unbelief, and the search for hope and meaning in a world of hardship and suffering. As a warning, this journey is not for the faint of heart. Etched on my memory is the occasion when an officer and I had to give a death notification to the parents of a 17-year-old boy who lived only a few blocks away. The boy was tragically killed on impact in a single car accident a mile from his home. He was the same age and a schoolmate of my daughter, both of whom were to start their senior year of high school the next morning. I met the officer at the hospital where the body had been transported. Without knowing any specifics about the fatality, the officer and I entered the room where this boy was laying on a gurney. He had been cleaned up, and a sheet covered him up to his shoulders. I took one look at his face and immediately recognized him. It was dear, sweet Robert, who lived around the corner from us. The same Robert I watched as a little boy play in the park next to our house. The same Robert who walked to middle school with my daughter. The same Robert who religiously practiced free throws in his driveway with his dad. Grief-stricken, I muttered to the officer that I knew this boy. Now we had to go to his home and inform his parents what every mother and father hopes they never have to hear. A sick feeling of despair sank to the pit of my stomach as it began to dawn on me how the whole community would be devastated. Officer Rollins and I drove to Robert's home around 9:30 p.m., a warm August night on the eve of the boy's high school senior year. The short 10-minute drive to their home was hell. There are dark moments when a chaplain can feel deep-seated doubt and disbelief, questioning that you chose this work, doubting that it makes any difference, shaken that such cruel tragedies happen, and disbelief that a good and all-powerful God would find this okay. I could not stand the thought of breaking this heartbreaking news to the mother and father. A sense of panic was setting in. My wife, only a block away from Robert's home, had gone to bed early because of a busy morning. Being a warm evening, she had all the bedroom windows open. Pulling up to the home, the parents saw our patrol car through their living room window and raced outside, having spent the last hour distressed by their son not returning home. Mom and Dad were frantic, and hysteria set in before we could say a word. They demanded to know what happened and refused to go back into the house as we first suggested. Standing in their front yard on this warm August night, I told them that their son was killed. It was unbearable to see their reaction. I sometimes still hear the mother's screams in nightmares that jar me awake at night. She wailed so violently that my wife at home in bed a block away was startled from her sleep. They were screams the entire neighborhood heard. Inside, I was undone by the despair and heartache I was witnessing. Later in the evening, Officer Rollins, who also had a teenager daughter, told me that for the first time in his 15-year career, he almost threw up from the emotional trauma of seeing these two parents reacting to the tragic news. Most people are sensitized to tragedy and death, which are the top headlines and trending stories and depicted countless times in films and television. But what gets lost on a screen is the humanity of the moment when people's hearts and lives are shattered by the unbearable loss of someone they love deeply. Words cannot describe the feelings of heartrending anguish people experience at times of significant loss. Being up close and personal to so many horrific and gruesome tragedies has been costly. Throughout the years, I have consulted therapists about having symptoms of PTSD, intrusive memories, trouble sleeping, emotional numbness, depression, feelings of guilt. These are some of the realities I and virtually all first responders experience. Rather than shoving down the volatility of emotions first responders feel, it is critical they have an outlet to share their stories, express their thoughts and feelings, and process their traumatic experiences. Writing this book, which has involved reliving many harrowing occasions, was not always easy. But telling these stories and sharing my heart have been cathartic and therapeutic. You might be wondering how God fits into all this. My faith and relationship with God have not protected me from the suffering, sorrow, and heartache of the human experience. It did not protect Jesus either. Jesus himself tasted the depths of mental anguish, emotional distress, and physical trauma in ways few of us ever will. He also met others in their suffering. Jesus did not theologize people's losses and tragedies. He entered into it in a spirit of solidarity, empathy, compassion, and love. In one of the most poignant episodes in the Bible, when Jesus arrives on the scene of another's heartache and grief, his response is described in two words. Jesus wept. In my view, Jesus is a model for the work and ministry of a first responder chaplain.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?